Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. Ashley Ruth M. Bernier is a writer from the Virgin Islands who currently lives in the United States. In 2022, EQMM published her first mystery story, which we present in this episode of our podcast series. This talented author had previously had literary stories published in distinguished journals such as The Caribbean Writer. In the months following her appearance in EQMM, she sold other mystery stories, including the story Ripen from Black Cat Weekly, which is currently nominated for the Short Mystery Fiction Society's Derringer Award for Best Novelette. Here is Ashley Ruth M. Bernier reading her story Rise from the March-April 2022 issue of EQMM.
I've got Cajun rum and conch fritters to keep me company while I wait. So it bothers me a lot less than it should when Alana finally breezes up the steps onto the restaurant deck 20 minutes after the time we agreed to in our text chain. The greeter points her in my direction, and I watch the look on A's face morph from the unimpressed lip scrunch she always flashes at service employees to a grin that shows the sound orthodontic investment her parents made back in high school. She squeals enough for both of us when we hug. She runs a manicured hand through my locks, something the Cajun helps me to forgive. And before we even sit down, her phone is out. Alana's in full makeup and a sleeveless yellow midi dress meant more for a summer wedding than a touristy beach bar. There's no way she's not taking pictures. "Oh, Lana, hey, I just came from the beach," I begin as she throws an arm around my shoulders and clicks a photo. "I figured since we were meeting here at Suncatcher, flip-flops and shorts would be okay." "Don't be ridiculous, girl. You look fine. If anything, I look overdressed," she answers. "You're gorgeous no matter what you have on, Nay. You could have on a trash bag and slay." I'm pretty sure my eyes are mid-blink in the next shot she takes. "Besides," she continues before I have a chance to say anything else, "I'm coming straight from a photo shoot for work. This is just what I happen to have on."
"You do photo shoots for the perfume store?"
She's rolling her eyes and laughing at the same time. "I quit that job almost a year ago. I couldn't secure my legacy as an entrepreneur while giving that place 8 hours of my day. The photo shoot was for my upcoming online business. I'm always happiest when I'm my own boss."
"Ah."
I don't want to ask, but she's left the question hanging there.
"A business for what?"
"My boutique. New business venture. Makeup, clothes, shoes, all curated by yours truly," she says. "Everything selected with my unique eye for style, so, you know, if you ever wanted to look for something to wear on air, maybe mention to the viewers where you got it."
"That sounds amazing, Alana," I say. "But at the network, we have someone on staff who, it's his job to choose what we wear for most of our segments."
"Of course," she says. A tight nod, a finger snap at the waiter, and a sharp jab with her finger towards my glass of water.
"Of course you do. I assume so. I just wasn't sure if they ever gave you any of your own creative leeway, which, I mean, I know owning a business isn't for everyone, but I'm so glad that's something I'll never have to worry about working for myself."
The waiter reappears with a glass of water for Alana, which she promptly lifts up and out towards me. "Should we toast?" I look at my two options and decide to raise my own glass of water. Better to save the rum for the rest of the conversation.
"Sure," I say. "To what?"
"To Alana and Naomi. To more than a decade of friendship. To your show being picked up by ETV and my website, when it's launched, becoming a worldwide phenomenon. To us and all our melanated magic being at the top of our game," she says. We clink our glasses. She takes a sip.
"Oh, and to Grandma Mavis, of course. I mean, I literally wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her, but honestly, you could say the same, right?"
I could. If it wasn't for Alana's grandmother, for the hefty scholarship in her name that I won right after high school, I could never have afforded to leave St. Thomas to study journalism. And if it wasn't for the incredible Virgin Islands cookbook she authored decades ago, I would never have had my lifelong passion for food. Cooking it, studying it, writing about it. I owed a lot to Mavis Montgomery.
I could also say this. If it wasn't for Alana's grandmother, for that hefty scholarship money that linked me to her family forever, I probably wouldn't be here right now either. I'm the only one from our high school class who still talks to Alana. Given that I'm only on island a handful of times every year, it's a chore I can maintain. The scholarship I won wasn't something I ever had to pay back, but I've been doing it slowly over the past 10 years, meeting up with Alana for dinner whenever I come down. And drinks. I always bring my two-glass rule when I'm with Alana. Conversations with her get me to the bottom of a glass faster than a spill. I've made my way through two platters of peel-and-eat shrimp and about half a BBC before the "so listen" falls out of her mouth. Dinners with Alana are incomplete without a big ask. A celebrity endorsement for the new line of sunglasses she was selling 2 years ago, or help from an insider, me, to get reservations for a splashy new restaurant in New York or Miami. She usually brings it up before the first round of appetizers, so the fact that we're almost ready to order dessert tells me that tonight's ask must be particularly big. "So listen," she begins, carefully peeling what has to be her second shrimp for the evening. "Are you just home for New Year's, or are you also here to interview Nori St. George?" "Oh, I know you and Rena Douglas aren't as friendly as you were back in high school, but I came down because, well, maybe you might have heard she's having a small ceremony for..." "Oh, I know Rena's getting married," she cuts me off. "I dated her fiancé, Javon, for like a month 5 years ago. Not even worth my time. He was going to night school, so he could never do anything fun, and he hated spending money on anything that wasn't, like, groceries. Lots of luck to her with that." "Dude's got his MBA now and owns 3 auto repair stores. He and Rena are getting married at a villa on a private island across the channel in the BVI, but I see no need to bring that up." "Yeah, so I'm here for that, mostly. Why'd you ask about Nori St. George, though? Wasn't she the lady who used to take care of your grandmother? Her nurse?" "Yes, exactly. She took care of Grandma Mavis for 15 years, right up to the day Grandma Mavis died," Alana says. "You remember, she, and then her kid when she got pregnant, practically lived in my grandmother's house. She cleaned up too, so she had access to every part of the house." "Okay," I say, taking a big sip of my BBC, "but why would I be interviewing her?" "Grandma Mavis died 2 years ago. She left Nori a nice bit of money in her will, and Nori used it to open a small food truck. She sells soup and saltfish pate, stuff like that, down on the waterfront to tourists. Well, anyway, Global Gourmand magazine was holding a recipe contest for regional comfort food, and her Johnny Cake recipe won." I nearly spit out my mouthful of shrimp. Wait, is she the one who won that contest? A few of my colleagues at the network kept telling me someone from St. Thomas won this year. And with a Johnny Cake recipe, too. It was such a crazy couple of months recording all the holiday shows that I never really got to follow up on that. But wow, it was Miss St. George? That's fantastic. Your grandmother would be thrilled. I swallow my food and clear my throat. And unless they changed things over there at Global Gourmand in the past few years, she must have won a nice piece of money, too. "Isn't the prize something like, it's $15,000, Alana says flatly. "Well, damn. I bet she could do a lot with that money. You said she has a kid, too? That cash will help." "It's the kind of story everyone loves. You're in TV. You're practically drooling over it yourself," Alana returns. I can hear her fighting the whine in her voice. "Single mom, former caretaker, runs a food truck, and now she wins all this money from a big-time magazine, plus all the fame and recognition that comes along with it. It's a feel-good story, right? Except that isn't her recipe, Naomi. That's Grandma Mavis's Johnny Cake recipe. Nori stole it from us." It's a moment that calls for another big swallow of my drink. "Wow, and you say that so confidently, too," I say, adding a chuckle to soften my words a little. "Alana, she owns a food truck. You yourself said she makes pâtés every day. She's familiar with that kind of dough, making it over and over every day. I'm sure she perfected her..." "Listen to me for a moment, Nate. Please, hear me out," she interrupts. "I've eaten Nori's food before, okay? Hell, I've eaten her pâtés and Johnny Cakes in my grandmother's kitchen. Nori's were dense and heavy. I followed the recipe in the magazine, and they're perfect, Naomi. They're crispy on the outside, pillow soft and fluffy on the inside. Every bite tasted like carnival, like a day on the beach, like my grandmother's kitchen. These are my grandmother's Johnny Cakes. So maybe your grandmother taught Nori to make them her way, I suggest. You know, so Nori could make her something she actually enjoyed. You ever wonder why my grandmother's cookbook doesn't include a Johnny Cake recipe? The quintessential VI food? Alana asks. I know I'll hear the answer anyway, so I nod. Grandma Mavis's Johnny Cakes were her crown jewel, her one special recipe. She never taught anyone the recipe because it was her secret, her pride. She never even taught it to me. Now, I was organizing some papers in Grandma Mavis's study a few months before she died, and I found some papers in a folder. They were recipes, updated recipes, with some extra wisdom and new dishes she'd learned since she wrote the first edition. There was a note on top of the folder. It said, "For my granddaughter." Alana's voice shakes a little bit. She was putting together a recipe book for me. She had the pages numbered and everything. And I saw it in there, Naomi. There was a Johnny Cake recipe in the stack. "Did you receive the folder after she passed?" I ask. "Well, you know I live in the house now. Everything in there is mine. The folder's still there in the study." "Not in the kitchen? You, don't use the recipes?" She rolls her eyes. "It's easier to get takeout most of the time. Getting the boutique set up, generating online buzz, that's time-consuming. I really don't have any time left for cooking." She shifts in her seat, and the setting sun casts a shadow over the brown of her arms and shoulders, rum with a little bit of Coke mixed in. "After Nori won that contest, though, after it was announced, I went through the folder," she says. "Three pages are missing. 18, 32, and 35. And there's no Johnny Cake recipe in there at all." "So you think..." "Not think. It's what I know. She stole that recipe, Naomi. She stole it, and then she won that contest with it. And now she has $15,000. Alana's eyes look away from my face, out toward the gulls and frigates swooping down for their dinner in the waves. "I could use that money. Setting up my boutique, selecting the finest items, all of that takes capital. I could go back to New York and Paris, stay there for a while to truly cultivate the best products to sell. I could pay a professional marketing company to define and promote my brand. $15,000 could get me a lot." "Well, 7.5, I say. Her eyes whip back to my face. "Assuming Alton gets half too, right?" "She didn't write grandchildren, she wrote granddaughter," Alana snaps. Whatever look I'm beaming back at her is enough for her to try again with more flippant, easy tones. "Alton got all the St. Croix properties from our grandmother, and we both got a nice bit from Daddy's life insurance. He'd just spend the money on, like, DJ equipment or something like that, or whatever latest woman he's chasing. He comes home even less than you do," she says. "So, listen, Naomi..." I nod and smile, but my hand is tightening around the bottom of my BBC glass. "I'm listening. Maybe you could talk to Nori for me. I mean, for both of us. It sounds like a good story for your show. And maybe during the interview, you could ask her about the recipe. Somehow get her to admit she stole it from my grandmother's house." I feel like the birds out there in the water, fishing for words but coming up empty. "Alana, I think you're overestimating my skills." "Oh, please, don't even. You've done investigative journalism before," she pushes. "For a year after college, that feels like forever ago," I say. "All I do on A Word from the Kitchen is talk to chefs and artisan cooks about their recipes and process. I interview, not interrogate." "That's all I'm asking you to do. Interview her about her recipe, about her process. Maybe she'll let something drop. When is Rena's wedding?" "Saturday, but perfect, so you have a few days." When she speaks again, her voice is much softer, quieter than it's been all evening. "You don't even have to think about this as a favor for me. Think of it as a favor to my grandmother. If anything, think about preserving her legacy as a Virgin Islands master chef. You know food was her passion. Cooking well was what helped her to meet my grandfather, to marry a Montgomery, elevate her status. If this really is her recipe, then she's the one who deserves the credit for it. She's the one who deserves the honor." I sigh, watch the sun slip below the waves way off in the distance. I open my mouth to respond, but she cuts me off again.
Please, Nay, you know I won't keep calling and blowing up your phone until you say yes, she says,
flashing me another grin that could serve as an endorsement for her teenage orthodontist handiwork. She'd gotten me with all she'd said about her grandmother, but if I'd still been on the proverbial fence, that last statement would have shoved me over hard. No need for that. I'll do it. I'll find a way to talk to Miss St. George, I tell her. Alana squeals happily again and then slips off to the bathroom. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to fit a conversation with Nori St. George into 3 days that include a bridesmaid's day sale and a rehearsal dinner when the waiter circles back with our check. I look down at the curling piece of paper, and I wonder whether she'll come back out this time, whether she'll offer to split the bill like we used to years ago when I was still doing freelance and blog posts. I sit there for a few minutes, watching the sky and waves grow inky and dark. And when it's clear the bathroom door isn't budging, I scrawl my name across the bottom of the receipt. Dinners with Alana, I'm always the one who winds up paying for them. We laugh about it later that night, Mateo and I, laying on our backs in the bed of his truck, staring up at the stars and the moon slowly making its appearance above St. John off in the distance. He listens while I vent about everything Alana asked me to do at dinner that night. Teo's always been able to find the humor in a situation, though, and it's contagious. I'd left the restaurant on edge. With his easy smile and quick laugh, he gently coaxed me back.
Lord, I could see it now. Two of all you sitting on the deck slurping down your BBCs while she asks you to pull a Nancy Drew and shake down her granny's maid. Classic Alana, my son, he says.
Ha, close. I had the BBC. She was drinking seltzer, I think. You know she can't do bananas. She's always said her throat will close up. You don't remember? That's why she stopped talking to Rena back in 10th grade. Rena bought banana bread to school for her birthday, and Alana couldn't have a piece.
I don't know, Teo. She's something else, I say.
I look down at my arm laying against his. If my skin is the color of Mobby, then Mateo's, with his Puerto Rican mother and Trini Indian father, more resembles the foam bubbles on top. He's my date for Rena's wedding. If it weren't for the ocean between us, he'd be my date for a lot more than that. Mateo was another one who stayed. He grew up down the hill from our school, in a neighborhood where boys often settled scores with their weapons and took their last breaths in the back of an ambulance. Mateo made it out, and now he drives one.
She is. You're something special to continue to put up with her for all these years, he says.
Small doses. I can handle that.
I wish she hadn't pulled me into this, though. I wish she'd just go speak to Nori St. George herself. You think she'd be able to talk things out with someone who was such a big part of her life?
Yes, but we're talking about Alana, Teo says. There's that usual light behind his words. But there's something else there, too. Something heavier that weighs them down a bit.
We both know she doesn't do well with people she thinks have done her wrong.
There's a small pause. She ever talked to you about the lawsuit?
You're talking about Cantina on the Bay, right?
The restaurant where her father died, right?
Not tonight, I say. Not for a while, actually. Maybe about a year or so ago was the last I heard her bring that up.
And if she's not bringing it up, there's no way I'm wading into that.
Of course, he says.
So I was on duty that night. I ever tell you that? I picked him up. Must be going on 3 years ago now, but I can't forget it. Man was face down in a plate of chips and guacamole. I was...
Pick up?
It was... I'm not supposed to feel too much, Nay, not while I'm actually working, when I'm in the middle of a shift, but Lord, for a man like Mr. Montgomery to just die on toppy food like that in the middle of a restaurant, I remember feeling...
He seems lost, so I try to supply a word.
Shocked? Because you knew him?
Nah, embarrassment. That's what I felt. For him.
He clears his throat. I picked him up before, too. Had a night he had too much to drink out east, and he fell down some steps, split his forehead open. Couple other times we got called to the bars for him if he was really far gone. He'd been in bad shape for a while. My parents say the whole island knew. I turn over on my side to face him. That's what I'm so afraid of with her asking me to speak to Miss St. George Tail. Everyone knew about Mr. Montgomery's problems, but Alana still sued the restaurant. Tangled them up in a ton of legal knots. Are they even still open? Mateo shrugs. The shutter's been closed for a while. The pandemic and all caused a lot of places to shut down, but Alana suing them didn't help either. So what about Nori St. George? Would Alana sue her too to get that $15,000? She has that food truck now, and now she's got a little something else to help her get ahead. Imagine if Alana takes all that from her just to settle a score. It actually doesn't take that much imagination. It doesn't! I can see it perfectly, I say. I'm laughing, but neither of us are joking. Lord, she's the complete opposite of her grandmother. He's quiet for a few, just long enough for us to feel a gentle gust of the north side breeze. I never knew her like you did. Mrs. Montgomery, I mean. But I knew about her cookbook. He chuckles a little. Everyone knows about her cookbook. That's her gift to all of us, I guess. Her legacy. She's a chef. And correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, but stealing a recipe from a chef is like, oh, it's sacrilege, for sure. She wouldn't have liked the theft if there was any. But she liked seeing people win, Teo. She liked pulling people up. That's what I remember about her most. I bet it's why she left Miss St. George all that money in her will. It's why she offered that scholarship. It's why she picked me. I look back up at the coconut tree fronds above our head, at the stars out beyond those. My entire life is a result of that choice of hers. I feel like I owe it to her to find out exactly what happened. Then do that. I can go down to town with you to find Miss St. George tomorrow. If you want me to, I mean. He reaches his own hand out toward mine. I see the moment when he freezes, when he second-guesses himself, and it only makes me rush to interlace my fingers with his, to lean my forehead against his, kiss his lips gently. Naomi, he says. His voice is soft and raw at the same time. What would it take to bring you back here, back home? I think about it, more than I want to, more than I should, and then I remember how far you are. Above me, I mean. How high you climbed. And I know I can't pull you back down, but I... Shh, Teo, please, I tell him. I swallow hard and look up at the moon, shining high above St. John's highest peaks, turning the channel below into a sheet of yellow glass. I'm here tonight. Can we please just go with that? There's another breeze in the trees above us. He kisses me this time, slips an arm around my waist, and pulls me closer. And I realize that for all the altitude he says I've gained, the real magic was in the ascent of Mateo's own hands. They'd grown from clumsy things that scratched out notes in miserable handwriting and swiped the occasional Snickers bar from the convenience store to professional instruments that could stitch and bandage and pump a heart back into a regular rhythm. His hands make me feel as light as stardust. They show me what it feels like to fly. I'm in the middle of buying several bags of bush tea when the phone rings, and, being distracted by the choice of lemongrass or balsam, I answer it without looking at the screen. Big mistake. Of course it's Alana, and of course she's ready for results I don't have. Alana's never learned how to wait. She'd cooked for me only a handful of times throughout our entire friendship. All I remembered from those meals was crunchy rice, 5 minutes or so from being tender. Pasta that was closer to its state inside the box than it was to al dente. A cake that was still slightly gooey in the center. Things that would work out perfectly if she'd just given them more time. Hey, Lana, I'm at the tea house in town, so let me call you right... I begin, but I've already said the only word she wanted to hear. Did you talk to her yet? To Nori? Alana interrupts. I was hoping I'd hear from you earlier this morning. It hasn't even been 24 hours, but I'm surprised she's waited this long. I'm downtown, shopping. I was going to try to see her while I'm down here. So, if you had to give me a time frame, what would it be? Like, the next hour? Half hour? It's just... I've got something writing on this, she says. Mateo walks over from the cash register, holding a huge piece of guava tart on a plate. I roll my eyes at him and point to the phone.
I guess I could go talk to her now, I mumble.
Perfect, Alana exclaims. I can meet you at Harbor Bistro in an hour. You can tell me everything. I bite back some of the things I'd like to tell her and half-heartedly agree. Mateo heads back to the register and gets a to-go box for our tart. I'll have to come back for my tea later. We walk through the colorful buzz of downtown Charlotte Amalie, making our way past historic buildings and statues of Virgin Islands heroes. There's only one ship in today, which means fewer tourists to maneuver through on the cobblestone streets. We walk past the towering yellow post office and sidestep the line for the Frico Man's truck. It's hot enough that everyone wants a cup of shaved ice with the syrups of local fruit poured on top. We're in front of the Emancipation Garden, with its iconic statue of the conch shell blower, the symbol of the slave revolt that resulted in their freedom almost 200 years ago. This park is where we'll find Nori St. George.
She even here today? I ask Mateo.
There's barely anyone in town, so maybe she... Nah, look, Nay, that's her truck over there, see? She's right there in the parking lot, under the tree, he says. I look at where he's pointing. There, in the paved lot between the park and the vendor's plaza right behind it, is a small food truck. It's purple, with the words Nori's Native Dishes painted on the side in large yellow letters.
You want to talk to her alone? He asks as we cross the street. I don't want to intrude.
No, Teo, please come along with me, I tell him. There's a group of kids playing tag in the park, same way I used to when I was in elementary school, waiting for my mother to finish her shift at the post office. I have no idea what I'm going to say to her, how to do this.
Pretend it's an interview, he says with a shrug. You come a long way since high school, Nay. This is who you are now.
We walk through the park and across the lot to the food truck. Nori St. George stands inside with her back to us, her hands deep in a mound of squishy dough. The scent of cooking oil hits me from several feet away. It smells, as Alana said last night, like the best parts of island life.
Hello?
I call out as we step up to the window. She turns around to face us. Nori St. George looks exactly as I remember her. She's a tall, skinny woman, the yellow tan of strongly steeped bush tea. She's older than we are, but not by much. She must have been barely old enough to drink alcohol or vote when she started to care for Miss Montgomery. The weariness on her face had always made her seem so much older than that. Today, though, there's no trace of any of that weight. Nothing heavy to slump her shoulders or pull down the corners of her lips. There's just a lightness in her shoulders, like the enormous puffy Johnny cakes in her plastic display case.
Can I help you? She asks pleasantly, running her hands through some water in her sink. The food truck's full of features.
I'm out of salt fish pâtés, but I do have some beef and some conch ones coming up in about 20 minutes. Just need in the dough now.
We can wait for those, I tell her.
I pause. Prop my shades on top of my head so she can see my face.
Miss St. George, I don't know if you remember me. My name is Naomi Sinclair. I used to be...
Oh, yes, Naomi. How are you, darling? Of course I remember. You used to be up at Miss Montgomery's all the time, she says through a big grin. You still friends with Alana, or...
I chuckle. About as friendly as one can be with Alana. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh, I understand, love. Believe me, I do, Miss St. George says. And we all know about you, local hero that you are. Oh, Miss Montgomery used to go on and on about you constantly. She was so proud of what you had become. With your articles and your interviews and all, I wish she'd been alive to see you on TV.
I do too, I say. I'd like to think she still sees us, though, from wherever she is. I give it another second.
She'd be proud of you, too, with this truck. I remember how important native dishes were to her.
Nori St. George smiles, exhales. She made all this possible. She left me a little something when she passed.
Got it. Hey, and I've heard you've got, something else to be proud of, too. We talk a lot about contests at the network. I hear you won something from Global Gourmand, I tell her.
Johnny cake recipe, right?
Every muscle in her entire face participates in that smile.
Maybe she was looking out for me with that too.
I
take a deep breath, touch Teo's hand. Pretend it's an interview, he'd said. As a food journalist and a lover of VI cuisine, I'd love to hear more about your process, about what it takes to make the perfect Johnny cake. They're simple, I know, but at the same time, it's one of those things that only a master does well. Well, tell you the truth, it's all in the dough, she says. Not so much about what's put into it, what you do to it. She lands a fist in the mound of dough on the board behind her, sinks the other one in there too. She rolls it up and gathers it into a ball. The flour, lard, the water, sugar, salt, baking powder, it takes some work to mix them, but with time, they come together to make the dough. But once it's made, it still ain't quite ready to fry. You got to pound it good, knead it, really bang it up, and then you need to let it sit. That way, it has a chance to rise. She cuts off a handful of the dough from the larger mass and rolls it flat with a pin. They don't look like much before they go into the oil, she continues. She cuts two slits across the circle and tosses it into a pan of hot oil beside her. But when they get in, when the heat hits them, look at them now. Look at how they puff up. I'm watching the flattened circle turn in the pot of oil, puffing and pillowing more with each passing second. I might have completely missed Mateo calling my name if he hadn't reached out and touched my arm at the same time. Yes, Teo, I ask, but when I turn to him, I see exactly what he's looking at. The group of children from the park is heading toward us. Leading the pack is a tiny girl, 4, maybe 5 years old, bawling loudly as she stomps across the parking lot. Incredibly, the enormous gash on her knee, presumably the reason for all that crying, isn't doing much to slow her down. Lord have mercy, Amari, what happened? Nori St. George yells, wiping her hands on a towel and opening the back door to the food truck. Mommy! The little girl wails. She just fell down, Miss Nori. She was running too fast, one of the little boys answers. Oh no, Nico had pushed her off the step, a girl corrects him. No, the boy, Nico, I imagine, shouts out defensively. You can lie to man. I didn't push nobody. Look, all you just go back in the park to play, okay? Your parents should be packing up soon, Miss St. George tells the group. Amari, Lord, look at that knee. I think I must have some band-aids here someplace. Hey, no worries. I got this, Mateo pipes up, kneeling down and pulling a first aid kit out of his backpack. I don't go any place without my kit. Always an EMT, even when I ain't on duty. You're the doctor? The little girl asks. She's the color of amber, rum without any coke mixed in, with thick light brown hair braided up into a crown. Not a doctor. Not yet. But close enough for right now, Mateo says. He smiles at her. My name's Mateo. I'm gonna get that knee fixed up for you. Man, looks like you were running real fast when you fell. I'm faster than Nico, and he's 8, Amari says to him. Their parents sell t-shirts and bags over there at the plaza, Miss St. George mutters to me. Amari likes to play with them, but they all a little older and she wants to keep up so bad. Oh, wait, sir? Hold up. Mateo's in the middle of tearing open an antiseptic wipe. Miss? Is the gloves. Are those latex? She can't, Miss St. George begins. Oh, no, Mateo interrupts, looking down at his gloved hands. He grins up at her. It's all nitrile gloves these days. We don't use latex anymore because of, well, sounds like you know. A lot of people are allergic. In the ambulance, all the clinics, only nitrile or vinyl. Right. Thank you. Amari is very allergic, Miss St. George tells him. She dashes around the back of the food truck and climbs inside, just in time to scoop the Johnny cake out of the oil. I stand there, watching Mateo laugh and chat with the kid as he cares for her knee, listening to Miss St. George fumble around behind me in the truck, doing the math, making the connections. And when it all comes together, all those parts like Johnny cake dough, I find myself looking at a truth as hot and as full as the staple Miss George has just pulled from the pot. The only thing left to do is serve it. You ready? The dough didn't sit for too long with this one, but it's still pretty good, Miss St. George says to me, handing the Johnny cake over to me in a sheet of wax paper. I look up at her, and the words fall out of my mouth with a quiet clatter. She's a Montgomery, I almost whisper. Her eyes shoot up toward her hairnet. I'm sorry? Amari, I tell her. She's a Montgomery. Please, Miss St. George, please forgive me if I'm stepping out of place. She is, isn't she?
What would make you think that? She places the Johnny cake down on the counter. She carries my name. The allergies. I've read about this, about the way proteins in different fruits and vegetables are related and linked. It makes it tough for some restaurants to work through their menus and create dishes that aren't too similar in the types of allergens they use. I look up at her. Alana's always talked about a banana allergy, and her father, I know he died in the middle of dinner, and I always assumed it was like a heart attack or something. But Mateo said the other night that Mr. Montgomery was eating chips and guacamole. Avocados, banana, and latex, like natural latex, they're all linked. The proteins, I'm betting the allergy runs in their family. She's quiet. Quiet and still, and I brace myself, not knowing what to expect next. You're all set, I hear Mateo say behind me. Thank you, Dr. Mateo, the little girl says. Come see me race. I hear her footsteps limping away back towards the park, followed by Mateo's, and watch Nori St. George's eyes following her as she goes. And when those footsteps disappear, when the child is gone, the lady looks back down at me through a face with considerably more heaviness than had been there before. It does, she said finally. Miss Montgomery couldn't do latex either, or bananas, although she liked a good pear, avocado, I mean, now and then. I see. I wait a beat. Is she Alton's? She chuckles but shakes her head. Alton! Lord, he's a ladies man, but he have a type. Spanish-speaking girls with long hair. I imagine he gets plenty of that in Miami. She's silent for a moment, and then, Amari is Adams, Alton and Alana's father. It was nice for a year or so. Mrs. Montgomery had sent Alana to Europe to study candle making. Alton was in Florida. Adam was getting help for his issues. Two of us were so lonely. We were there in the house all the time. But those, issues can be hard to beat, I finish for her. Adam fought hard. He was still fighting when he died, she says. Did Mrs. Montgomery know? I ask. There's a tiny nod. She knew. We never really spoke of it. There's school money set aside for Amari that only I know about. And a recipe book? I ask. Her eyes go wide. What do you know about that? There it is again, that hot and blazing truth, only this time it's my turn to serve. Only what Alana's told me. She thinks there's a recipe folder her grandmother left her, one that's missing a few pages, but there's a lot that Alana doesn't know she doesn't know. You and her, you still talk, Miss St. George says, about some things. I take a step closer to the food truck counter, to her behind it, and I continue. There are other things I don't talk to Alana about. Things she wouldn't understand. Things that only make sense if, well, if you have to start from the bottom of the ladder instead of closer to the top. A nod. Right. Oh, you're so right, Gil, she says, a mix between a mutter and a sigh. She looks away from me, cuts and rolls more pieces of dough in a fierce rhythm. There's a moment that feels too long, one where she tosses circle after circle of flattened dough into the pot, a moment when I begin to think that the conversation is over. But then I see her hand stop. She leans against the work counter, and then, finally, back still to me, she speaks. Alton got all the St. Croix properties. Alana got the house. After Mrs. Montgomery died, Alana moved in must be 3-4 days later. Everything inside, she said, was hers. She let me in one afternoon to grab things I'd kept there for me and Amari. That folder was for my daughter. Her grandmother had been putting it together for months. But you didn't take the whole thing, I say. I took 3 recipes, she tells me, turning around to face me. The fire in her eyes could cook the rest of that Johnny cake dough without problem. I left the rest for Alana, but I took 3 papers from the folder. Pumpkin soup, coconut sugar cake, and Johnny cake. Things I thought Amari would like. Things I imagined Mrs. Montgomery making for her if Amari was sick or sad or, you know? I know. She shakes her head and pulls 2 Johnny cakes from the pot, setting them on paper towels in front of me. It's when I notice Mateo's wandered back over from the park and is standing behind me silently. Some days I wonder whether I should give them some of that money from the magazine. Miss St. George says. You know how big Mrs. Montgomery was on looking out for her own. It's who you are now, Mateo had said to me earlier. The right words are there, on my tongue, before I even realize it. She didn't start off in that big house in the hill, Miss St. George. We are her own. I take a napkin from a black dispenser on the serving counter and pick up one of the Johnny cakes. I rip off a piece and watch the steam rise from the puffy interior. Nori St. George watches as I take a bite, as the morsel crumbles and melts on my tongue. It tastes like a billowing hug, like a grandmother's love. It's perfect, I tell her. Thank you, she says, almost shyly. Listen, I know your job is to ask questions and find answers, but Alton and Alana, they don't know anything about Amari. And no, you keep enjoying your gifts, Miss St. George, I interrupt. You keep using them. I promise I won't tell Alana about any of this. We're halfway across the parking lot, heading back towards the waterfront on the other side of the post office, when Mateo finally speaks. Have you thought about what you actually will tell Alana? I haven't. And I've only got about 10 minutes before it's time to meet her at the bistro. That she can't have the money, I say. You think she'll take it well? Oh, she doesn't. Not in the least. Mateo and I have barely settled into our seats at the bistro when she asks about my conversation with Nori St. George, and I barely get through my first sentence when she slams her fist on the table, sending Mateo's phone and the pepper shaker flying. Are you being serious with me right now? That's what she said? She got the recipe from a family member? Alana's in full makeup again. The fake lashes and the blush only amplify the anger on her face. That's bullshit. There's no way. I know it's not what you wanted to hear, I tell her as calmly as I can. But I've done tons of interviews and I've learned how to separate the truth from the rest of it. She got that recipe from someone on her daughter's father's side. And you believe that, Naomi? We're supposed to believe she got that perfect recipe from some old woman down in Antigua or whatever it is she's from, or wherever that nameless father is from? There are tears flooding Alana's perfectly lined and shadowed eyes. I was counting on that money. I found a fare to Paris and a low-lease apartment there for 3 months. I've got a hold on it on travelstore.com for 24 hours. How am I supposed to pay for it now? How am I? This isn't right. It's not right. I'm so sorry. Are you? You get to go wherever you want. You've already got your dream job. This is the one thing I wanted and I can't even. It's not fair, she hurls at me. Alana, maybe this is, I begin. No, I need a minute. I'll be back, she tells us. She gets up from her chair and stumbles out into the main walkway of the restaurant. She snatches up her coach bag and stalks off towards the bathrooms. You think you need to go after her? Mateo asks me. No, I think she needs to feel this, I tell him. I think it needs to hurt a little bit. He's confused. Nay? It's like Miss St. George said, I try to explain. She needs to be pounded some. And then she needs that space, you know, so she can have a chance to rise. A smile spreads out over his face and he reaches for my hand under the table. Our fingertips touch and there it is, that feeling of weightlessness, of gliding above the tops of clouds, of air beneath my feet. I try to convince myself that whatever Alana's feeling right now will get her here too. It's the oil in that pan. It's the heat below it. I know something inside her will swell and double, push her higher and higher until she can look down and see the place where she started as a tiny dot down below. I'll be there when she does. Together, we'll marvel at how far we've climbed. Together, we will soar.
Rise is copyrighted by Ashley Ruth M. Bernier. Music for this podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing were done by Kevin Wheeler and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at ellerycleanmysterymagazine.com.